Hello and welcome to the Kinetic Fitness Show, where we inspire you to live a longer, healthier, happy, and more joyful life. We cover everything you need to know to be optimally healthy in your mind, body, and spirit. Are you ready to become the ultimate version of yourself? Well, let's dive into another episode with your host and guide by your side, Allie West.
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to episode number 86 of the Kinetic Fitness Show podcast. Thank you so much for taking your time out today to listen to this episode. I have a great episode lined up for you today with a very, very inspirational and interesting guest. But before I introduce him, before we get stuck into the content of today's episode, there's just a few things that I would love for you to do for me and also a few announcements. So the first thing is to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Just takes one press of your thumb or one click of a button and then you'll be updated with whenever I release a new episode. Secondly, please leave me a review. If you are able to leave me a review, I would love to read and receive your review. They help me out massively. They help me to grow, inspire, and reach more people as well. The third thing is to share this podcast. Simply share this podcast with your friends, family, colleagues, and loved ones. Very, very simple to do. Just tell people, tell somebody, one person about the show, or even better, share it on your social media. So grab a screenshot of this episode, post it to your social media, tag me in it, Allie West Coach, A-L-I-W-E-S-T-C-O-A-C-H, Allie West Coach, and I will share it with all of my friends and followers as well. Okay, on to some announcements. So a couple of announcements today. The first one is a real big one. The podcast is now officially on YouTube. Yes, it's taken me a while. It's only taken me a couple of years to get it onto YouTube, but I finally took the plunge and started to upload the podcast interviews onto YouTube. So all of the podcasts that I do, I am doing my very best to get video of the episodes as well and get them onto YouTube. There will be some episodes though where it is just the audio, but on the whole now you should be able to watch and listen to the podcast. I know some people do prefer the video, so head over to YouTube and I'm starting to upload episodes on there. Please be patient with me. It's going to take me time to get episodes on there and upload most of the shows, but they will be on there. So do go over to YouTube, hit the subscribe button, hit the notifications on YouTube, and check out the YouTube channel. The next announcement is in relation to our online coaching program, which is our 12-week online coaching program. So I have a question for you. Would you love to drop 20 pounds of body fat, improve your relationship with food, and take control of your health in just 12 weeks or 90 days, whichever way you look at it? Well, if you would, I can coach you how to do it, or we can coach you how to do it. Our 12-week online coaching program covers everything you need to know to take you from where you are now to where you want to be. We focus on three key areas, which are mindset, nutrition, and exercise. This is all underpinned by coaching and accountability. So if you are ready to blast away body fat and take control of your health for good, all you need to do is head over to the description of this podcast and hit the link to book a personal one-to-one Zoom call with myself. In this call, we will learn more about you, your goals, what you want to achieve, and I will explain the program to you in more detail and ultimately see if we're a good fit for each other as well. So just click the link in the description of this podcast, fill out the short application form, and book your call with me as soon as you can, because spaces are limited. I look forward to coaching you, inspiring you, and helping you. So that's it for the announcements. Let's move on to today's episode and introduce my guest today. My guest today is Brendan D. Murphy, and Brendan is a truth addict, spiritual intellectual, and nonconformist. He is the Australian author of the book The Grand Illusion, and Brendan, in his own words, has a strange constellation of attributes, tastes, and talents that are impossible to pigeonhole. Brendan has spent the last 20 years and some 15,000 plus hours studying in the fields of consciousness, spirituality, psychology, and religion, different healing methods, techniques and systems, self-evolution and personal development, human potential, conspiracy facts, geopolitics and the deep state, exopolitics and exobiology, medicine, big pharma, the war on natural health, suppressed history and technology, plus much, much more. And for what reason? For what outcome? Well, for freedom. So we could figure out how to live freely, powerfully, vitally, and generously, and then help others to do the same. In short, Brendan's business is your transformation, embodiment, and freedom. So in this episode, we cover so many different areas and so many topics, which are, but not limited to, reality and human consciousness, Brendan's book, The Grand Illusion, DNA manipulation, personal development, plant medicine and shadow work, healing of trauma, closed-mindedness, awakening people, conditioning and brainwashing, how to come unstuck, transformational experiences, freedom and truth, plus much, much more. So I love this episode, a really deep conversation we had together, but I'm sure you're going to enjoy this episode. And in an hour, we cover so much content. So I hope you get some value from this. If you enjoy this episode, please do share it. And let's get stuck into today's episode, episode number 86 with Brendan D. Murphy. Let's do it. Hey, Brendan. Thanks for joining me on the podcast. How are you?
Very well, mate. Thanks for having me.
No problem. No problem. I'm looking forward to our chat.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's good to connect, you know. Don't know a lot about you, so I'm going to be learning as we go, man. But I already...
Likewise.
Yeah. Likewise. I think it'll be good.
And we've got a big time zone difference, but it's all good. I think you're my fourth guest from Australia, so... Cool. I'm used to it, and I've got somebody else in a few weeks coming on from Australia, so you always have to adjust the time, but it's all good.
Yeah, that old chestnut, I know it well.
Cool. Well, many different things that we can speak about, but I think a good starting point for me and for the listeners is to learn more about you. So if you're happy to give us a little bit of a backstory and tell us your story and how you help people and what you do, and then we'll just go from there, mate, and we'll see where this chat takes us.
Yeah, cool. Well, I guess, you know, my backstory, you know, I didn't go to school to get sort of qualifications or become an expert in something. I kind of just had my own individual path, kind of the path of the autodidact. And, you know, that started when I was about 20 or 19, going on 20. And I had my kind of spiritual awakening, and that was triggered by a really amazing book that was published around 1991, 92, called The Holographic Universe. And so I read this thing on the suggestion of my younger brother, who heard about it through a guy who was giving a talk at school. And he just, for some reason, he came home and felt like he had to share that with me. And I just sort of tucked it away in the back of my mind. And about 6 months later, roughly, I'd always remembered it. And it was one of those unusual sort of events and things, unusual for me to keep a book in the back of my head for that long and remember it and think, you know, I've got to go and read this for some reason. But that was the trigger point. So that opened my mind to what is possible, the nature of reality, the nature of consciousness, the interplay between the two. Well, they're actually one. It's the same thing. So that was part of my sort of journey and discovery and developing the understanding of what is real and who are we, what are we, and what are we doing here? And I've just been doing that for the better part of 20 years. And you know, that's kind of, I guess, you know, on some level, I'm fundamentally an educator, but I also do a bunch of stuff. I never have a great answer for people because I'm not someone you can pigeonhole. It just doesn't work. So there's just a lot of sort of hats that I can sort of wear, and that's just, you know, complexity is my curse and my gift.
Yeah. So this 20 year journey that you've been on, and like since you had this spiritual awakening, what has it shown you? What has it taught you about consciousness, about spirituality, about your own life and your own being and your own journey? What has it shown you?
Well, that's a very open question. that could go for hours. I guess you know, the core truth, one of the things, you know, if you like, the central theme of my first book, which I felt was important enough to kind of spend 5 years working on this thing full time, without pay, you know, basically living as a pauper virtually, because I felt this sort of mission and calling to get this knowledge out to people, which is basically that boils down to a very simple concept, which is not new at all, is in fact quite ancient. And that is that what we really are fundamentally behind appearances is infinite consciousness with no beginning and no end, something that has nothing to do with space and time as we conceptualize them. And so, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of. There's no death. There's none of that. There's nothing to fear of life or death. It's all just part of the same sort of virtual reality illusion that we've conjured for ourselves to experience duality and multiplicity and relativity, and learn and experience in the process of creating these games and illusions we call reality, and seeing what we make of ourselves inside of them.
Yeah, makes sense. What about your book then? Can you go into a bit more detail on how that came about, what's in the book, how you went about the whole process of writing the book, and yeah, just tell us more about that. The Grand Illusion, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I guess, you know, if you go back to the original awakening point, it was like, I just started becoming addicted to information and seeking knowledge. So that was my thing. And so I was constantly reading. I was constantly reading nonfiction. I was constantly reading, you know, science and philosophy and comparative religion and all this stuff. And I was always highlighting and making notes and stuff as I went along. And eventually I realized a few years later, as I was 24, I realized that it was time to start writing and putting this, organizing this material into something. And so that was the beginning of a sort of five, maybe six, almost 6 year process where I just basically did nothing else. And I was sort of like 8 to 12 hours a day working on this, pulling this material together. And I went through this very, you know, it was very socially isolated. You know, I was basically a hermit, and being a hermit kind of suits me anyway, in a lot of ways. So I was kind of like isolated, and just gave me this time and space to be very, very monofocal and just sort of block out everything else and dive into the depths and all the different rabbit holes of reality, and see what I could pull together and make some connections and see some interesting things that, you know, maybe other people haven't seen yet, and present a big picture view of that investigation, which, you know, turned out to be something. I've read a vast amount of stuff, so I know that my book is very unique, because I've read just about everything else out there, and I know that it's something very deep and very broad and very powerful, particularly based on what people have told me about their experience reading it. So it was designed to be kind of like a transformative epic experience, and I think that that's what's happened for at least some people who've read it anyway.
Yeah, what's the overarching idea of the book? Like what will it teach people if they read it, and what will they get from it? I mean, obviously everyone's different when it comes to books. Like 10 people could read the same book and get a different thing from it, but what kind of feedback have you had? What stuff do people get from reading the book?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the person, because there's so much in there. It's like it's not one of those books that focuses on just one thing, although there is a thread that runs through it, which is basically, I was trying to find a way to enunciate and illustrate the basic essential perennial teaching, which is that we are this field of infinite consciousness, and everything exists within that, and all possibility exists within that. And there's, you know, basically no limits in terms of what is possible for reality. And so I realized consciousness and reality are the same thing. They're synonyms. And I was just trying to illustrate that in as many different ways possible. So I investigated the human cities, the superpowers, if you want to call them superpowers, you know, the different psychic abilities, the ability to manipulate what we consider matter. But I also investigated what matter is. And so that puts a very different angle on things when you realize that what we think of as matter is actually an inversion. We need to invert our thinking on that, which is often the case with the way that we're conditioned about many things. We have to invert our beliefs, switch them around 180. So matter, for instance, there's been some very interesting clairvoyant investigations done into subatomic particles and atomic particles. And so I talked about that at some length. And it's very interesting to realize that what we picture as matter is actually not, it's actually emptiness. And we live in this sort of field of, it's consciousness, but it's something that we can conceive of as having a kind of substance or force, if you like. And it's actually like, if you use the analogy of being in a, you know, fish tank, for example, or being in water in the ocean, and you blow a bubble, right? The bubble is the absence of water. And that's the equivalent without what we think of as matter. Matter is the absence. It's actually the absence of that field, if you like. There's a force that presses the walls of that field back and pushes it out and forms these empty particles of nothingness. And it's essentially kind of like this cosmic joke. You know, nothingness arranges itself into these structures that we think of as matter, but there's actually literally nothing there behind it.
I've read on your website, and I watched a few of your videos, and you're talking heavily about your DNA and manipulating your DNA and certain things you can do to change that kind of cellular makeup and genetic makeup. Can you go into a little bit more detail on that and how you've used that yourself to help yourself and to help your own health, well-being, mindset, the whole lot?
Yeah, so I guess there's a pretty extensive field of research that's called epigenetics, which is basically, you know, elucidates the idea that we can influence gene expression and change our change how we function physiologically through any number of different means. I mean, our biology responds to pretty much any change in the environment you can think of. You know, we go into a dark room, we turn the light on, you know, that creates changes in gene expression, you know, different moods, anger versus joy. These all create changes, epigenetic shifts. And so the idea with working with DNA activation, as we call it, is to create these intentional kinds of shifts that have an evolutionary kind of bent or an intention behind it. So it is, you could consider it a sound healing technique. So we're using sound, we're using the human voice, we're using what's popularly known as the solfeggio scale. Mm-hmm. And so working with sound and pumping information into the body using the quantum field. So using intentionality to do that. And that's one of the things that I've investigated very heavily in the book and explain how that sort of works. And so, yeah, it's kind of like we have healing, but then on the other side of the spectrum, there's something that goes beyond that. There's transformative experiences, which can, things like, for example, someone has a near-death experience and it radically transforms their personality. People end up with healing abilities. They end up psychic. They end up having a very different attitude to life, massive personality, you know, value changes in their personality and how they see things and life and what it all means. So transformative experience is kind of where that paradigm of DNA activation as I work with it actually lies. So it's more like more comparable to like a shamanic initiation. You know, the point of initiation is to take a boy, for example, and turn the boy into a man. So it's a transformative process in a calculated, controlled sort of setting. Yeah. So that's kind of, the ethos behind that kind of work.
Yeah. And so you say you're using the frequencies and the harmonics. Is that a combination of like the music and your voice, or just your voice, or what kind of techniques are you using?
Yeah, in this instance, it's voice based.
Okay.
So it's focused on that, and then you know we supplement that with the tuning. We use a tuning fork.
Yeah.
And you know that's the solfeggio forks, if you like, solfeggio tones. So yeah, it's voice driven. There's actually a vowel sequence. So, you know, a sequence of, you know, like A, I, O, U lines of text that are vocalized, in a particular format. So it's a very structured kind of crystalline, method or approach to using the voice.
And what kind of transformations and breakthroughs are you seeing people have, when they use this technique?
There's a pretty interesting spectrum. You know, it really does vary from a lot of physical healing through to things like I've had a bunch of people tell me, you know, maybe weeks down the track, for example, they come back and say stuff like, you know, I just feel like I need to get out of the city. I just want to buy some land. I want to grow my own food. Like they want to, there's this like compulsion to reconnect to the earth and reconnect with what's actually real and authentic. So that I think is one of the most impressive things to me, aside from the physical level stuff and the emotional stuff. There's an urge that is allowed to surface like this. I think we all have it, you know, latently, like we want to be connected to the real world. And it sort of allows that to start emerging. So that's been a very interesting thing to see.
My next question then is why are there so many people that don't have these experiences? Like, so for example, yourself, you've had like this spiritual awakening. I've had one. You've worked with clients and people that you've helped that have broken through and maybe seen the light or found out more of a deeper understanding about themselves and their own consciousness and consciousness as a whole. But why is there so many people walking around that are maybe plugged in, we could say, or that are not experiencing these things?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I mean, speaking from experience, I didn't have any mystical experiences until I had the mind opening experience first. Like that to me is the foundation. You know, you can't let reality into a closed mind. It doesn't really work. So for me, at least on my journey, that was the trigger point, was being like, oh, wow, this is possible. And then shortly after came spontaneous mystical experience that anchored that in and showed me, oh, this is actually real. Like this is reality. And, you know, people don't tend to have, I mean, we've got a lot of people who are not particularly open, but you got to remember that we're all born into this matrix, which is designed to suppress the magnificence of a human being. I mean, it's designed to keep us as inept and credulous and dumbed down as humanly possible. So there's a lot of very closed minds and very unaware people, but it's engineered to be that way. It's engineered and designed that way. So it's hard to wake up under those circumstances through years of conditioning and years of brainwashing and to be able to then access something deeper than that. It's an achievement.
Do you think, this might be a bit of a hypothetical question, but do you think that maybe some people are quote unquote destined to have these awakenings, to have this experience, and some people are destined to be trapped in the matrix and just not awake or not? Deep question.
That's a great question. I mean, you know, it's sort of like, I start having thoughts about, well, you know, the nature of time and this idea of pre-life, the afterlife or interlife, you know, where we have a lot of information on this stuff, you know, from methods of like hypnotic regression and this kind of stuff by multiple different people over the last 30, 40 years. And so that's really interesting to look at it that way in terms of most people, most souls from that paradigm, most souls would incarnate into this reality, into the human life with a rough plan, some kind of intention, some kind of agenda. And you know, they program in these little experiences that are preordained, if you like. But they're just the key ones. They're the sort of the key experiences that will shift you in this direction, shift you in that direction, help you make a decision, an important choice, that kind of stuff. And so that's sort of like we kind of make plans for ourselves or our human avatars to have these experiences as a way of harvesting experience and knowledge and life of what things are, and to grow into something that otherwise wouldn't be possible without that experience. So, yeah, I mean, to sort of come back to your question, it's sort of like it does seem to me that there are some people who are destined, if you like, to not have that awakening, but I'm being quite surprised at the same time. I mean, you never know what someone else's soul agenda is. That's the thing. Like I can only speak to what I see around me, and it's interesting to see now, because this COVID situation is so outrageously absurd, people are starting to ask questions and wake up, people who I never would have expected. So it's really interesting to see. I mean, I don't think we're all supposed to become, you know, superstar Tony Robbins conspiracy speakers or anything like that. But you never know what's possible. And if people are open simply open and receptive to experience and nature and reality, then it's like, you never know. You become a bit of a wild card in that sense if you are open, because then you can have experiences and the universe will interact with you in a kind of intelligent, synchronistic way. Whereas the people who are closed tend not to have those experiences. And so they doom themselves by choosing to remain closed off and emotionally armored. They choose to remain, essentially doomed until they choose otherwise.
Doomed.
That's a bit heavy.
Yeah. Do you have a methodology or a way of maybe interacting or getting through to those people that are a little bit more like closed off? Or do you just like wash your hands with them and just say like, look, we're not on a level, it's not going to work? Or do you use any techniques to try and talk to those people or interact with those people that are maybe a little bit more closed and haven't awoken?
It depends on the situation. I think there are times when I have a bit of a mischievous streak, so I don't mind, winding someone up occasionally. It depends on the individual. Some people you can see, and because I've been doing this so long, you can see them coming a mile away. These people who have never lifted a finger trying to understand anything, but they think they've got all the answers. Mm-hmm. And these are people who are sometimes described as useful idiots in terms of the system that controls us, because they help perpetuate it. But then, I think a lot of people are in a position where they just don't know any better. And it's like, if you ask questions, sometimes I find just asking someone basic questions like that points them in the direction of becoming aware of that they don't know something, like, just because a question encourages someone to reflect inwardly. Whereas if you come at them with, here are the facts, this, they just go, well, I don't want to know about it. Put the walls up, and then, you don't get anywhere with it. So asking questions is really great, particularly when you're with someone, engaging with someone who is kind of like stubbornly closed off, because in the end you can often, use that technique, Socratic questioning to, open them up. Or if they refuse, then, they hang themselves with their own words in a way. And it's kind of like, it's not about sort of winning battles and stuff, but it's good to have a sense of fun about it too sometimes, and just have a laugh.
Yeah. You said a second ago about people being closed off and they don't know any better. But I also think as well that some people are just, they're literally addicted to suffering. Like they like that, like they get a kick out of it. And that's just the way they are. And that to some extent they might never change, because they like the way things are of being in that kind of, maybe in the system or just literally suffering all the time. They just keep going back for more. It's like a drug to them.
Yeah, totally. Those people, they're all just like variations on a theme. Like, we all have these adaptive strategies that we, we adopt them mostly when we're very, very young, extremely young. And then, we see things happening around us. Maybe our parents are arguing or whatever, and we create a story about that and we tie ourselves into it. And, children don't know any better. They don't have that critical thinking faculty yet to go, well, hang on a minute. What, it's just like, oh, this is my fault kind of thing. Oh, because I'm here, I'm involved in this, this is my fault. My parents are arguing because of me, or, whatever's going on. We create these stories and they become part of our identity. I knew someone who used to create, she would start a fight with her partner if the room was too calm and peaceful, because she grew up in a household with a lot of aggression and violence. And she was so adapted to that, that the absence of it actually caused her stress. So she would try to recreate that, as a way of feeling comfortable. That was her comfort zone. And, we're all just kind of, until we become conscious of that and intervene in our own patterning and our adaptive kind of strategies, like we play them out until we either die or we wake up. And it's like, that's what's happening. So many people are addicted to suffering on that level. It's like they don't have the ability to self-reflect to the point where they can go, what am I doing here? Like, what is my unconscious agenda here to hold this situation in place where I'm suffering? What part of me is being served by this and feels, you know, safe or secure in this space of torment? Like, and you see it all the time, you know, we are largely unconscious. Like, we're mostly run by the unconscious. It's like 99% of what we are. And so it's a real challenge to step out of that and become aware, like, and make that stuff, that really deep seated stuff in particular, that gets locked away in there before we develop the rational faculty. That stuff's very hard to access because it tends to be non-verbal and not really conceptual. It's like a subconscious, instinctive, associative, feeling based. And you know, that can take a lot of work and undoing. So yeah, we're all kind of, we've got our work cut out for us, but some people have a harder time than others. And partly, you know, often through no fault of their own, they've just been put into crappy situations from day one, and then, you know, have to kind of undo that over time.
I want to talk to you now, mate, about blockages. So let's say somebody has been working on themselves. They're quite aware maybe of what their purpose is. They're maybe spiritually inclined. They might have had a spiritual awakening. They're constantly developing themselves and learning and challenging the norm and questioning things, probably like yourself and me. But they've got blockages as maybe something stuck or holding them back. What would be your tips, or like, what's the guidance to maybe get rid of those blockages and come up unstuck so they can progress to the next level, so to speak?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question. It's a huge domain when you go into how to get unstuck. I mean, there's so many different approaches, and it's like, you know, it's well worth taking the time to do a little bit of homework and look for someone who might have that skill set who can maybe guide you through it. You know, if you're blocked, if you're feeling blocked, like you're in that kind of situation where you're in Groundhog Day and, you know, you got this recurring scenario that happens over and over. I mean, it's like time to step back and give pause and ask yourself, you know, what part of you is actually engineering this, and what part of you is being served by this? How is this actually benefiting you? Because there's almost always, you know, particularly in those recurring scenarios where it's like, oh, I'm stuck, I can't get past this, and like, you're there for years. It's like, there's some part of you that actually is creating that intentionally because it would feel threatened in any other circumstance. So, you know, a lot of it comes back to figuring out, like, okay, and you don't even have to figure it out. I mean, there's people who work with the subconscious, the nonverbal parts of the subconscious, you know, the affective mind, that's all that stuff that's buried and really, really suppressed or repressed, and can communicate with that and help you reprogram that. But it's such a journey. I mean, the personal development journey of undoing that stuff is, and untangling it is, you know, there's so many tools, and we could go on tangents about different tools, but there's no magic bullet, you know.
What are some of the tools you've used yourself, mate? Because I know, I mean, I've read some of your story, and I've read watched some of your videos, and you was in that position, wasn't you? You was on that, maybe like that, yeah, I think you call it the hamster wheel, ways things were the same over and over again. And what were some of the tools you used to, or have used to, come unstuck? Is it the stuff that we've spoken about already, or is there other stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that was the DNA stuff was definitely one of them, for sure. Man, I've done a lot of different things. Even, you know, from plant medicine, you know, like taking, for example, magic mushrooms in a ceremonial, in, you know, setting. You know, that can be very powerful stuff because it's a psycho-integrator, and that's ultimately what you're really talking about when you talk about being stuck and in a loop. It's like you've got these different parts of you that are competing against each other for supremacy, and it's generally the subconscious that wins. So what was I going to say? Train of thought's been a little bit derailed, but yeah,
plants.
Stuff that I've used. Yeah, plants, very helpful in terms of integrating the psyche and making things, helping you to come back into your body. A lot of us get traumatized and we start to dissociate, and we sort of float somewhere off to the side or somewhere above ourselves physically, you know, and it's like, that's a coping strategy that's useful at the time, like when they're talking about trauma-based mind control, these rituals that children are put through that actually kind of like split the personality, and it's like it's a coping mechanism. But if you don't eventually come back and resolve the old trauma and the pattern and the coping strategies, then those coping strategies that might have been created when you were 4 years old, it's like that four-year-old version of you is running your life as a 40-year-old. And that's where you got to come back and start looking, doing that shadow work. You know, people talk about shadow work, and it's like doing the stuff that is not glamorous and seeing yourself in all your sort of raw and occasionally gruesome glory. It's like, that's part of the journey of integrating and being able to move forward. Because as long as we've got those suppressed, repressed parts that are fractured and hiding in the dark and stuff, you know, you can't beat them. You can't expect the conscious mind to overrule the much more powerful subconscious. It's just an uphill battle. It's like you become Sisyphus and you're rolling the rock uphill. You get to the top, it comes down again, and you just keep going like that. It's like you need to start finding techniques and tools to address that patterning subconsciously and get into it. I found mushrooms a very somatic experience, very interesting in the way that it lit my body up, like all the old tension and stuff that I'd had going on in the muscular system. It all kind of lit up like a Christmas tree. And that was part of that process of integration. And I had a mate who was a clairvoyant, very good, very developed seer afterwards, tell me that, you know, I was more in my body after having been through that experience, because that was the intention of me doing that stuff. It was the integration. Whereas some people go and take, you know, they go and have a trip and they do it to escape and get away. Whereas, you know, my intention was to come home and pull it all back, pull the pieces together, you know?
Yeah. Oh no, definitely the mushrooms are very, very powerful. Actually, it was about 3 weeks ago that I had a magic mushroom trip, and I went in with a bit of an intention, and it was like a purpose-based intention. And it's quite poignant, really. Like after the trip, the biggest takeaway for me was that my purpose is just to be. That's what the plants were telling me. So I was like, okay, if that's what you're telling me, I'll go with it.
Yeah. That's it. Like, and you'll get the medicine, like you tend to get the medicine that you need at the time, you know? So
yeah,
that's one avenue that people can explore. I know plenty of people who've had like amazing experiences in terms of, I don't mean like, oh yeah, wow, what a trip. I mean like stuff that's actually helped them to heal and move forward in life, you know? And it's like, it's not necessarily the way that you have to go, but I avoided the psychedelic path for many, many years because I figured, you know, that's probably not necessary, yada, yada, yada. I had my reasons, right? And eventually, you know, after doing all this other stuff, the DNA activation stuff and, you know, 50 other different modalities of working on things and removing emotional residue through the body and getting it out of the cells and integrating that and, you know, like having emotional discharge and crying and this kind of thing, like letting emotion out that's been there for years and years and years and not expressed is a very cathartic and liberating thing. Like it's a very healthy thing to be able to do that and let it out and move on, because whatever's stuck in your body as a charge, as emotional charge, is that holds you, that kind of holds you where you are. Like it's very difficult to move out of your established patterns if you still have those charges stored in your body, crystallized in your body and holding you there because you're not acknowledging them. So it's like, you know, the unconscious that doesn't get acknowledged rules you. That's what's kind of in charge. And it's just scary. Like some people don't want to go there. Like they don't want to reactivate past trauma. They don't want to be hurt again. They don't want to feel that old stuff. But if you don't figure a way to address it, and it doesn't have to be necessarily full force, like dive in and, you know, have like a massive tear fest and fall to pieces. But if you don't start finding a way to approach this stuff and looking, get inside yourself and inside the cells and come back into your body, then, you know, it's very difficult to make any real kind of progress in your life. And I don't mean progress like, you know, getting rich and getting the Lambo or anything like that. I just mean being able to function in the way you would like to function. And that's been just a thing where I've taken the opportunity to learn different tools, like, for example, Psych-K, EFT, all this stuff that works somatically and rewires the mind and the subconscious and gets charge out of the body. All of that stuff, you know, has its place and it's useful, you know, Reiki, you know, I did Reiki level one and all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's sort of courses for horses in a way. But the point is to have the intention and act on it and do it. Yeah, like you got to start somewhere. And if you don't start, then you're going to find it really, really difficult in the long run.
And as you've alluded to, there's so many different modalities, so many different tools, techniques. It's a case of sometimes just finding what works for you. So for like the plants might work for us, they might not work for the next person. Reiki might work for one, it might not work for the next, and the list goes on and on and on. So it all boils down to, do you want to improve yourself? Do you want to work on yourself? Do you want to live the best possible life you can and be the best version of yourself? And if you do, then there are tools that can help you to do that. And also I want to touch on what you said earlier about the about getting the trauma out. And sometimes it's not always, I mean, there's this kind of preconceived idea sometimes that people think that the spiritual journey is all like, yeah, it's cool, and like we're sitting on a mountain meditating and all that, and we're happy and joyous all the time. And it isn't like that. Like, some of my spiritual experiences have been tough, and I've like you say, I've cried my eyes out, I've had pain in my body, I've been like cramped up, I've seen things, I've heard things, and it's not always plain sailing, and it's not always quote unquote positive experiences. But you've got to do the work if you want to live the best life, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It's like I'm kind of always asking myself, like, what's possible? You know, I live from the space of what's possible. What can I create? What can I become? So, you know, I have that impulse to kind of want to better myself. And the reality is that I've found over the years is that is mostly not at all glamorous. That is just like the idea that you can, you know, sit in full lotus on the top of the mountain and become this amazing embodied human is basically bullshit. I mean, it really is. Like, that is not how you, that is actually escapism. And then there are people who are mistaking escapism for enlightenment. And so that's a really insidious trap, because we have, like you said, these preconceived ideas of what being spiritual means. But, you know, in my experience, a lot of that stuff is kind of this superficial ego stroking wank that is designed for people to avoid doing the real work, which is a lot less glamorous and pleasant. That's just the way it is. Like, I remember listening to a friend of mine, Jeff, who has done many, 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 many ayahuasca sessions. And some of the stories that he's come back with, I mean, you know, lying in a cane field in the dirt in the middle of the night, bawling his eyes out and vomit all over himself. I mean, it's like, you know, this isn't all like kumbaya around the campfire. It's like doing the real work is, you don't necessarily want an audience for a lot of that stuff. It's like, you know, for me, you know, the last few years I've been really, really dedicated to doing, you know, like almost whatever it takes, like to kind of get whatever's in there, whatever needs to be integrated and brought out, whatever processed, just doing it. And, you know, some of that has involved just bawling like a baby, like holding, like releasing stuff that's been sitting in me for 20, 30 years, you know? And that's powerful. That's a very powerful thing, just to be able to express emotion like a normal human. We're supposed to do it, you know. It's not healthy or natural to hold it all in and store it, you know. It just doesn't work.
No, that's probably not the best word to use, but that is a problem for a lot of people, is that they do just literally bottle it up. And as you said, that trauma, that those issues can be stuck in people for, as you said, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. And it's just, it's no good. It's that you've got to do something to help you out, to get rid of it, to release it. And it's, as we said, it's not always plain sailing.
It's not. And I feel compelled to say, like, the experiences of like the transcendent kind of mystical experiences that I've had have been mainly early on in the journey. They were like the experiences that just gave me that anchoring of awareness of a much bigger picture. a much more deeper picture and insight into what I am and what we are and what reality is. But I haven't been drawn back there, basically. Like for the first 2 years of my path, so like basically from age 20 to 22, I meditated heaps. I went to like a spiritualist church. I did like trance meditation, all this stuff, meditated at home. You know, I wanted to go down that road and develop, you know, psychic abilities and all this thing. But when that stopped, when that got derailed, you know, I haven't really ever felt called to go back there. And what I've really felt drawn to do is actually do the kind of more gritty work of personal, like what most people would call personal development work, which is, you know, a lot more of a, it's much more testing in many ways, much more challenging. And that's where I felt the greatest value has come. That's where I've become able to step into and embody my potential and my power much more so than if I had just continued going and sitting in the dark and meditating. You know, like I would have probably had some great, amazing, you know, mystical type experiences, but that isn't what helps you necessarily to embody your potential and become who you really are as a human being in a physical body. You know, like, let's not deny it. We have these bodies for a reason. We're here for a reason. We chose to be here. And my challenge is to embody whatever, like the archetype or ideal of what's possible for Brendan Murphy, and to find out what that is and ground that in and be it in the flesh, you know? So not trying to escape the flesh, but actually live, you know, whether you want to call it like Christ consciousness or that kind of thing. It's like just becoming the maximum, trying to push, and there's no finish line, you know, but it's just the journey of that unfoldment, like peeling off the layers of the onion. And what's possible now, you know, what's possible now, what else can I do? What else can I become? And I just never would have made the progress if I had continued sitting in the dark, meditating and trying to go off and, you know, all that kind of thing. It just wouldn't have worked the same way.
Yeah. And ultimately it's, what I get from that is you've found your path, you found your journey, and it could have gone the other way. You could have just carried on meditating and that could have been one path, but you didn't, and you've gone down this route, and that's your journey. And it's, everyone's got their own journey, their own path that they follow, or paths that they follow. And you've gone down the one that's working for you, and it's also helping you to ultimately live your purpose and live your best life, so to speak.
Yeah, and you just got to be real. Like, you just got to be real with yourself. You know, one day I might go and decide I want to go and do exactly that again, and sit in the dark, and you know, access those other abilities, and do that kind of thing, and live the life of more of a mystic. No, it's just, I don't believe in following someone else's formula, and I'm sure you don't either. Like, you just have to be real with yourself, and sometimes finding out what's real for you is, that's part of the journey too. It's not necessarily easy, you know? I count myself fortunate that it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks out of nowhere, you know, and it's just been like, you know, duck to water ever since. But yeah, a lot of people don't have that, and they have to really struggle to kind of find themselves. And yeah, I get that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about freedom then, because this is a big part of what you do and what you promote. So you talk about three different types of freedom, right? So spiritual freedom, health freedom, and is it lifestyle and impact freedom? So can you go into like freedom in more detail, what it means to you, how you help people become free, and so on?
Yeah, to me, it's just what is, it's like, what's possible? How can I express what's possible for me? How can I express, you know, my creative intentionality? That's kind of freedom to me. It comes down to being able to be yourself, whatever that looks like, and to not feel limited by circumstances or resources, that kind of stuff. So I guess in a nutshell, you know, that's a simple kind of, and not to not be controlled and, you know, manipulated and that kind of thing as well, obviously, which we have a bit of an issue with at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would like to say and think and believe that they're free, but they're probably not. Would you agree?
I would strongly agree, yes. Yeah, I mean, we're taught that we're free. Like, that is one of the memes of society, is we are taught. It's, you know, smashed kind of very insidiously smashed into our minds that we are free, and we are, you know, we're in this fantastic democracy and everything's peachy, and hooray for capitalism and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, if you dig into it, if you really investigate what freedom looks like and how the world actually is run and how these power structures work, you find something quite different. And you find that we mostly have this very weird illusion of freedom. I mean, we can in principle be free, and we can in principle have our own thoughts. It's just that most people's thoughts aren't their own. They're not original to them. They're programmed in by the matrix. So yeah, I mean, most people's minds don't belong to them yet. Although I'm seeing the tide turning. So culturally and societally, we have to have that happen. That this event, this awakening event, has been a long time coming, and we have to have that if we ever want to discover what freedom actually looks like on a collective level, and to see where we can go as a race, as a species, and to move in the direction of what's possible rather than constantly being under the boot, you know, 1984 style. So yeah, I mean, I kind of look at it like that as well. I mean, I want to create a world that's free, and to do that, I can't be totally restricted in my personal life. I can't have the same level of impact if I am restricted. You know, I live most of my adult life broke, and I know from experience that that's not a very powerful place to live from. So I would much prefer to not do that and to have some kind of resources behind me that I can channel into the world in a constructive, creative way, and, you know, help other people to do the same thing. And part of being free collectively is just, we need to keep talking about it and defining what it is and what it's not as well. You know, because like we're saying, you know, there's this level of manipulation involved.
I'm going to ask quite an open question. Where do you see things going then over the next, I don't know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years? Do you think we are going to, as a human race, do you think we are going to move more towards being like free, the free that what me and you would consider free? Or do you think it's going to go the other way? Or do you think there's going to be a division? What's your kind of personal viewpoint on where you see things going?
Yeah, I think we're in an interesting time. I'm sure you find it pretty interesting too. I mean, it's so interesting to watch the terrain change and to see people who you never would have imagined kind of waking up and going through that process. And it's like, it's almost like all bets are off at this point. I mean, on the one hand, we have this sort of aramanic or satanic force that's kind of trying to bring the boot down on the face kind of thing. And at the same time, it's coming down so hard that it's forcing a lot of people into actually challenging that and going, hang on, what's going on here? What's this all about? So I think that the overreach of the system is helping to wake people up. And it's sort of like it's almost a race between the awakening and the suppression of basic freedoms. And, you know, we're seeing our government in Australia, and particularly Victoria, trying to destroy every last basic right and freedom humanly possible. And at the same time, they're so extreme that it's helping to wake people up. So you have this kind of evolutionary impulse sparking up and coming alive. And at the same time as this anti-evolutionary impulse is trying to step on us. And so I think next couple of years are probably going to be pretty rocky, and very, you know, we keep hearing about this inevitable financial crash. You know, there's going to be this huge crash, there's going to be this huge reset, this global thing. And maybe that's true. I don't have a crystal ball. It looks like things are going to get pretty sketchy. And I know that there are a lot of, you know, from different sources over many decades, predictions or prognostications. I remember reading a very interesting passage in one of Whitley Strieber's books where he talks about visiting his future self in one of his, you know, altered state experiences. And this future self, the future version of him living in the US, was living in this kind of like post-apocalyptic almost kind of scenario. And, you know, life was very difficult and very basic and, you know, been stripped back, you know, a lot less people there, that kind of thing. You know, we have an amazing opportunity though, you know, as much as the darkness looks pretty grim, it's like, it's actually helping us in a lot of ways. It's like we needed someone as fascist as Daniel Andrews to be the Premier of Victoria in Australia so that people could wake up and start thinking about what they actually want to experience as a human, what kind of a life they want to have. These are questions a lot of people have never asked. And now the tyranny is actually encouraging people to do that. And it's happening on a scale that is making things look really interesting. I think we have an amazing opportunity here. Like the emergence of suppressed technology, for example, like there's so much stuff that Tesla solved the energy crisis 100 years ago. And that's been suppressed, you know, the FBI locked his papers away and all that stuff. So it's, as we start to, you know, realize how grim things seem to be on the surface, it's like at the same time, we're going to have the suppression lifting and all this amazing innovation and human creativity and technology is going to start coming to surface, to the surface. And it's just a very interesting time to be alive and consciously witnessing this transition. Cause it seems like we are in a transition, you know. Definitely. People talk about the new earth, you know, the new earth splitting. Yeah. Those two worlds. And I think that's happening, you know, metaphorically. You know, we've got a lot of people choosing to stay asleep. They live in the old earth, and a lot of people choosing to wake up and they live in the so-called new earth. And where we take it from there is really up to us. We could create something absolutely incredible. We have the capacity, we have the intelligence, we already have most of the solutions to most of our problems. We just don't realize.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think things can't go on the way they have done forever, and they shouldn't, because it wasn't working. Like, people are like, oh, I can't wait to get things back to normal, and or normal in inverted commas. But I don't think things were working before this whole COVID thing. So I think whatever it is and wherever we're going, I do think it is a bit of a grand awakening and a shift. And fingers crossed in the right direction as well, because you can't keep going the way we was going, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it was looking pretty bad. It really was. So this is going to be probably a huge restructuring process over the next few years in terms of global resources and management of all that stuff. I mean, it's going to be huge. I think the world will be unrecognizable in 5 to 10 years time, quite possibly.
Yeah. And this brings me on to the next thing that I want to talk about, which is like the whole truth thing. And with so much this has highlighted it more than anything, what's happened this year with the whole COVID thing, fake news and all the stuff that's going on. I mean, even for someone like myself, I'd say I'm quote unquote pretty awake, but even myself, I found myself like, oh, okay, so what's true and what's not? So how do you go about like really seeking the truth and finding the truth? And what's like your advice to maybe the listeners listening to this to like really go and dig deep and find the truth of what's really going on? Or do we never really know the truth?
Oh man.
What is truth?
Exactly. What is truth? There's always facts and then there's counterfacts. You know, you can always argue the complete opposite if you want to. And I think that's sometimes, you know, that's worth doing, like just studying another perspective with the intention of understanding it, as opposed to just waiting to rebut it or argue against it. You know, like listening is a lost art in our civilization. Most people don't know how to listen. They think they're listening, but what they're actually doing is they're waiting for you to stop talking so they can jump in and have their say again. And it's like, that's part of our problem culturally, you know? So just listen with the intention of comprehending. And, you know, you can see people, if you do the kind of stuff I've been doing for years on, for example, social media, where you post things that you know go against the official establishment narrative, you see all these people come out of the woodwork with these knee-jerk reactions, and they're super triggered and they're just coming out of their egos. And it's like, that's how you don't do it. This is what not to do. You know, instead of going, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, why not listen and go look at a perspective that doesn't align with yours and go, is there an opportunity to learn here? know, does this guy know something that I don't know? Asking those questions is just fundamental, and thinking things through instead of just reacting from emotion. Basic stuff.
Definitely. Happened to me the other week. I put something on Facebook and, oh God, it was a bombardment from a lot of people. But yeah, it happens. But that is a very, 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 very good point about listening. And I mean, people probably don't realize that there's different types of listening. And I think the way to listen properly is empathetic listening. And that is the deepest level of listening. And as you say, most people are just like, they're there, but they're not there. And it's in one ear and out the other. And as you said, waiting to like put their own spin on things or put their point across, when you really just need to listen empathetically and get a deep understanding of what that person's trying to say. And then, yeah, and then make your own decision and find your own truth within that.
Totally. And the reality is, like, we as humans are essentially, we are infinitely ignorant. I mean, we can never be otherwise. We live on a planet where there is essentially, for all practical purposes, there's an infinite amount of information, and it's constantly expanding at an exponential rate. No one person can stay on top of even one field of human activity or endeavor and know everything about it, let alone all the other fields of human activity and research and what have you. So understanding that no matter how knowledgeable you think you are still infinitely ignorant. And there's never ever going to be another outcome. You can just continue to chip away at the unknown, at the ignorance. And we're all in the same boat, essentially. But it's kind of what you do with it and what you make of your mind. Like we said, you know, the ability to listen is so crucial. Like, it will take you far. It will take you very, very far if you figure out how to listen and how to use information instead of information using you, or to discern the difference between information and propaganda. I know so many people can't tell the difference between the two, but it's not hard to see when you've got a bit of study under your belt.
Yeah. I'm reading at the moment, the book I'm reading is The Age of Propaganda. It's pretty good. I'm only like 30 pages in, but it's all about, yeah, how the messages that we get and marketing and persuasion and propaganda. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, man, that sounds like a really good book. Who is that by?
Let me tell you now. I'm going to look. Because there's a second edition, because I think it first came out in like the 90s, like 1990. But there was a second edition, and I'm reading the second edition, which is like early 2000s. It's called The Age of Propaganda, The Everyday Use and Abuse of Persuasion by Anthony... why is my computer? Anthony Pratakanis and Elliot Ardson. 2003 is the second edition. It's interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like a very timely book to be reading at the moment, because we are being smashed with propaganda from the medical system and governments and the media, government, medical system, AKA Big Pharma. They all work hand in glove. And what they're doing right now is just massive propaganda. But most people think that they're being given information, because they've been conditioned to believe that doctors or scientists are simply these paragons of virtue who do nothing but seek the truth and tell the truth. And they have no idea how corrupt the pharmaceutical industry is and how it connects into the political system and medicine and blah, blah, blah. So they think they're hearing this propaganda and thinking that they're getting information, but it's actually nothing but, it's anti-information. It's the complete opposite of information. It's garbage. And it's the same memes over and over and over again. So, I mean, a great way to end up really uninformed is continue listening to your politicians and the medical spokespeople, you know?
Yeah. I also look at it in another way as well, like, and it's like, not to applaud them, but like the level of like persuasion and the level of like brainwashing is just like to some extent, you've got to like applaud them because like they've done it so well. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just, it's absolute. When you really think about it, it's like, it's madness, like how deep it goes and how they've done it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It is. It's astonishing. True. I mean, you can't, like, for example, like this is a classic in the realm of truthing, if you like, you know, on social media, someone who believes or someone who has done their research or has been injured by a vaccine, they go and they make a post about that and they share information. And then you get a bunch of people who are completely conditioned. They have no experience. They have no research behind them, immediately jump down their throats and just spew all their buzzwords and catchphrases and their slogans at them. And it's like, this is what you're up against. You know, people are conditioned to say things like, oh, so you think you're more an expert than the doctor. And it's like, hang on a minute. Do you even know what a medical student learns about that subject in med school? And these people have no idea. They think that they're taught everything there is to know, but they're actually taught exactly what the pharmaceutical industry wants them to know. And everything outside of that, they don't hear about. And they're put under so much stress and pressure to just keep up with all the stuff they're supposed to rote learn and regurgitate for exams that they don't have time to think. And I had that conversation with Dr. Andy Kaufman, who will tell you that is what happens. It's like psychological, emotional abuse that they get put through the ringer for years. And they don't have the capacity to think critically through it. And they aren't taught critical thinking at any point in their education. So they come out with this, you know, a certain very limited select body of knowledge. And then a lot of accompanying attitudes and assumptions and beliefs that they have. And then the public is conditioned to perceive them as these godlike authorities. So you're not supposed to question a doctor. You're not supposed to, you know, that's audacious. That's outrageous. You just don't do that, right? Who are you? You don't have letters after your name or before your name. It's like a doctor doesn't learn anything about vaccination at med school. Sorry, they don't. So by the time your average parent has done 50 hours of actual real investigation, proper due diligence, they're streaks ahead of your average GP. They already know more about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same with everything. It's the educational system as well. It's like even the subjects and the content of those subjects were taught in school is, I mean, most of it's BS. Like history, for example.
Oh man, history's a classic.
Oh, I mean, that's one thing I'm like mad into at the moment is just like actually finding out our real history and not the again propaganda I've been spun at school, and it's just crazy. The whole timeline that we've been told is just all wrong.
Yeah. I mean, who does it serve, right? You got to ask who benefits from the version of reality that we get sold, and it's like, generally, it's not us. It's not designed to benefit us. Otherwise, the institutions, the establishment wouldn't give it to us. No? They give us what keeps them in power.
Yeah.
So, you know, history is fake. I mean, we are sold a largely fake, very distorted history. Yeah, absolutely.
Fake history, fake news, fake idols.
fake medicine, fake viruses.
yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, it just never ends.
So what's next for you, mate? What's on the horizon for you? Have you got any more books in the pipeline or what are you working on?
Yeah, I spent the last 10, 11 months working on the sequel to The Grand Illusion. So that is, that's coming probably next year. I'll get that out, but that's massive. That's already a huge behemoth of a book. So very deep investigation of afterlife, life between lives, but you know, taking it further than most of the other authors out there, which is, you know, what I like to do, and just a very big picture perspective and getting into the esoteric and the occult side of things and elucidating that and making it understandable and relating it back to, you know, what the real science actually has to say about these things, if it does have something to say about it. And it usually, or frequently does. I mean, one of the themes of the theme of book one was basically, I was constantly showing people, hey, this is what the esotericists and occultists are saying. This is what the mystics are saying. And over here we have modern science. And guess what? You know, they match. Like they're two peas in a pod now. There's no real opposition there. It's just a matter of generally science catching up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a really interesting study. I'm still going down that road, and I want to get that book out next year. But in the meantime, podcasting and, you know, working with people, doing the facilitating DNA activation work, maybe doing a little bit of mentoring type stuff, coaching, that kind of thing. That keeps me pretty pretty busy.
Yeah, it's awesome, mate. It's awesome. I've lost my train of thought. What I was going to say was it. It's backtracking, actually. But going back to, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just wanted to point this out because I forgot to mention it earlier. But on the whole doctor and medical side of things, I actually have 3 clients that are doctors, and I was asking them about like why don't more doctors like speak out about stuff and all that. And one of my doctors was just said basically like, you only need like 1 strike to lose your medical license. So if you have 1 complaint against you, it's gone. So, and that's the fear for a lot of people. So I just wanted to point that out because it popped back into my mind and I didn't mention it earlier.
Yeah, totally.
I think Andy Kaufman says that a lot as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he lost his last mainstream medical job because he refused to wear a mask, if memory serves me. So, you know, your friends are right. I mean, it doesn't take much. The system is so aggressive with recalcitrants and renegades. It's just, you know, their livelihood is on the line, and a lot of these guys don't have a backup. They don't have a plan B. So it's like, you know, that mentality of what will I do if I can't do this? And so they shut up and they toe the line, and it's a very unfortunate situation, but that's how Big Pharma operates. You know, they will not tolerate economic competition. They've been very, very clear about that, and that's how they train their doctors to serve their economic interests.
Yeah, definitely. I know you've got to go and get your dinner, so I think we're going to wrap things up, mate, but I've absolutely loved that. I mean, loads of different topics we've spoken about, and we probably could have gone down different rabbit holes and spoken about more things, but I know you've got to get your food. So where can the listeners go to find out more about you, Brendan, where your website, your social, all that kind of stuff? I'll also put links to it in the description, but if you can just let us know what they are now, and then we'll start to wrap things up.
Yeah, thanks, man. Well, if they want to watch the DNA activation masterclass and understand more about that, that's at evolveyourself.live. My website's brendandmurphy.com. If you want to find me on a social platform, you can search Brendan D. Murphy Official or search my name. And we have truth.network, which is a Facebook alternative, because we actually got censored by Facebook in 2018. Our page got shut down, deleted overnight. So we just set up Truth as a way of protecting free speech for our community, our truth speaking community. So there's truth.network. Yeah, I think that kind of wraps up where people can find me for now. I'm obviously on Facebook and all that stuff as well, Instagram and all that jazz. So yeah, not hard to find.
Awesome. We always end my show with a favorite quote. So can you just hit us with a quote to finish? It can be one of your own. It can be one you live by, anything. Just hit us with a quote and then we'll wrap it up there.
Okay, off the top of my head, the first one that comes up is, "Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance," by Albert Einstein.
Love it. Thanks so much, Brendan. I really appreciate it, and I wish you all the success, mate.
Thank you, man. I really enjoyed chatting with you. Happy to do it again. And yeah, you take care over there, man.
Thanks, mate.
That's a wrap on another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. Until next time, peace and love.